Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Trump got into an argument with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi on camera today. Then, as usual, he tried offering them $130,000 to be quiet.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth interviews Johanna Hayes, who was recently elected to represent Connecticut's 5th District in Congress. Plus, just for this podcast, Johanna continues the conversation backstage at Studio AG. But first, a closer look.
The Justice Department effectively called the President of the United States a criminal on Friday as Trump announced the departure of his chief of staff. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Trump is desperate to talk about anything other than the growing legal problems engulfing his presidency, and you can tell because he's picking fights with everyone from France to China to his own former Secretary of State. He's like a feral raccoon trapped in a corner in the attic. If he loses in 2020, they're gonna have to chase him out with an Oval Office with a broom. Go, get on! Get out of here! Oh, no, now he's biting the broom! On Saturday, for example, he unleashed an unhinged Twitter rant about Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal and unveiled a new nickname for him, calling him the Dick. Wow, he's getting angrier and lazier. The guy's name is Richard, so you nicknamed him the Dick? Go ahead. Take the rest of the week off. You nailed it. Then Trump called his former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson dumb as a rock and lazy as hell after Tillerson, in a rare interview, offered some brutal criticism of his former boss.
How would you describe Donald Trump?
He acts on his instincts. In some respects, that looks like impulsiveness, but it's not his intent to act on impulse. I think he really is trying to act on his instincts. It was challenging for me, coming from the disciplined, highly process-oriented ExxonMobil Corporation, to go to work for a man who is pretty undisciplined, doesn't like to read.
That's the former Secretary of State talking about the President of the United States like he's Mowgli. I mean, he doesn't mean to howl and walk on all fours. He was raised by wolves. Although, in fairness to Trump, the reason he doesn't like to read is that he is bad at it, even if he will never admit it.
Through their lives, and though their lives, beating expectations in the House for the midterm and midterm year. They sacrifice every day for the furniture and future of their children.
Instead of saying furniture, excuse me, future, he doubled down on furniture and future. Can you imagine being this guy's Secretary of State? I want to bomb North Dakota. You mean North Korea? I mean North Dakota and North Korea. I meant both. You cut me off before I got to North Korea. And while he fires off one Twitter insult after another, his White House is also undergoing an unprecedented level of staff turnover. People are quitting this White House like it's a Kmart the day before Black Friday. And on Saturday, Trump confirmed speculation that Chief of Staff John Kelly would be leaving the White House at the end of the year, which means we're at the end of the John Kelly era. And I just hope that now that his tenure is over, everyone who hailed him as a paragon of discipline and order when he first took over will look back and admit that they were very wrong.
Kelly's mission is less drama, more discipline inside the inner circle.
He's going to be great. Keeping things organized, keeping everyone in their lane.
I think he will bring some order and discipline to the West Wing.
I hope that he will demonstrate to the president the value of discipline.
If anybody can bring order and discipline to this White House, it is General Kelly. I hope that we're at a turning point now.
Oh, hey, it's Senator Richard Blumenthal from earlier. And you were right, Senator, it was a turning point. When it started, you were Richard Blumenthal, and when it ended, you were the dick. Guess he stayed in his lane. Kelly was never going to bring discipline to this White House. For one thing, you can't change Trump. And also, Kelly wanted the same thing as Trump. We all just projected ourselves onto Kelly because his face always looked the way we felt. But now we know that's just his face. That's his everything is going great face. Here he is blowing out the candles on his birthday cake. And here's John Kelly on a roller coaster. In fact, Kelly served a president for whom lawbreaking was apparently so routine that Tillerson had to routinely explain to the president that the things he wanted to do were illegal.
When the president would say, well, here's what I want to do, and here's how I want to do it. And I'd have to say to him, well, Mr. President, I understand what you want to do, but you can't do it that way. It violates the law. It violates a treaty.
The Secretary of State had to explain to the president that what he wanted to do was illegal. I can't even imagine what that was. Yes, Mr. President, we have the technology, but you can't just shoot someone into space. It's illegal, and on top of that, it's your son. Trump is fundamentally lawless. Not only does he think he's above the law, he doesn't even understand the law. And on Friday, we got the clearest picture yet of his serial lawbreaking. The special counsel in the Russia investigation and prosecutors in New York filed sentencing memos for Trump's ex-campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, and his ex-fixer, Michael Cohen. And they made it pretty clear that the Justice Department has damning evidence on Trump's ties to Russia.
In a new court filing, special counsel Robert Mueller says former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort lied about several key points after agreeing to cooperate with prosecutors.
Now, this could mean Mueller's team has more evidence about contacts between people close to the president and Russians, but during the 2016 campaign.
In November 2015, prosecutors say Cohen spoke with a Russian national who claimed to be a trusted person in the Russian Federation who promised the campaign political synergy and synergy on a government level.
Oh, synergy. Trump must have been so pumped when he heard that.
See, it wasn't collusion, it was synergy. And now I'm just going to check my thesaurus and son of a bitch!
And if you thought prosecutors were being coy when they used the word synergy instead of collusion, they were much more on the nose in their sentencing recommendations for Cohen. Prosecutors spelled out as clearly as possible in this document that they believe the president of the United States committed a crime by paying hush money to cover up affairs. How do we know that? Well, they didn't mention Trump by name, but according to the court documents, during the campaign, Cohen played a central role in two similar schemes to purchase the rights to stories, each from women who'd claimed to have an affair with individual one, so as to suppress the stories and thereby prevent them from influencing the election. And who is individual one? Well, the court documents are cryptic, but here's one clue. On approximately June 16, 2015, individual one began an ultimately successful campaign for president of the United States. Of course, the only thing worse for Trump than finding out he's individual one would be if he found out he was individual two.
Who the hell is number one? It's not Hillary, is it?
So there you go. The court documents say explicitly that Individual 1 committed a felony, and they make clear that Individual 1 is the president of the United States, or, as Trump put it on Twitter, totally clears the president. Thank you. Now, you might be asking yourself, how could Trump have read these documents and come to the conclusion that they totally clear him? And he explained it to reporters on Saturday.
On the Mueller situation, we're very happy with what we are reading because there was no collusion whatsoever. I think it's all turning around very nicely. But as far as the report that we see, according to everybody I've spoken to, I have not read it.
You?
You didn't read it? Oh, dude, you should read it. If there was a document that detailed crimes I was implicated in, the only way I wouldn't read it is if I knew what was in it. Trump might as well go full old cowboy and say, I don't have to read it, boy. I lived it. Well, in lieu of reading, Trump must have spent the weekend psyching himself up because this morning he got up early and gave us all that classic Twitter meltdown we were expecting. And aside from the misspellings, watch how many times he changes his argument in the span of just two tweets.
Democrats can't find a smoking gun tying the Trump campaign to Russia after James Comey's testimony. No smoking gun, no collusion at Fox News. That's because there was, all caps, no collusion. So now the Dems go to a simple private transaction, wrongly calling it a campaign contribution, which it was not. But even if it was, it's only a civil case like Obama's, but it was done correctly by a lawyer, and there would not even be a fine. Lawyer's liability if he made a mistake, not me. Cohen, speaking of Michael Cohen, his former fixer, just trying to get his sentence reduced, all caps, witch hunt.
My God, it was legal, but if it wasn't, it was civil, but it was done correctly, but if it wasn't, it's not my fault. But to put it away, Donald Trump will understand, where there's smock, there's foyer. And let's just address for a second this argument that Obama did the same thing, because it's an argument Trump supporters are starting to make, and it's insane. Every campaign makes paperwork errors. That happens all the time. And in 2013, Obama's campaign was fined for omitting some donors' names. Independent experts called it relatively minor, and even a Republican lawyer said it was a very clean audit report for the Obama campaign. And let's be honest, there's a huge difference between an accounting error and a hush payment to cover up an affair. If you don't believe me, go home and tell your spouse, I had sex with a porn star and made an accounting error. Let me know which one they focus on. Trump didn't just make a paperwork error. It's not like he was sitting there with a green eye shade trying to balance the books and miss something.
Let's see, $50 for pizza, $100 for lawn signs. Oh, $130,000 to pay off a porn star. I almost forgot. I'll put that under utilities.
Every day, there are new revelations that seem to fade away, but this feels like a watershed. The Justice Department just called the president of the United States a criminal. I don't know if Trump will ever be indicted or impeached, but if he is, he probably won't know what he's charged with because he...
doesn't like to read.
This has been A Closer Look. Guest was named National Teacher of the Year in 2016 and 2018. She was elected to represent Connecticut's 5th District in the United States Congress. Please welcome to the show, Representative-elect Johanna Hayes, everyone. So lovely to have you here.
So lovely to be here.
So this is very exciting. You will be starting January 3rd in Congress. You... however, also very impressive in 2016, Teacher of the Year, and you met President Obama.
Oh, yeah.
And you...
oh, yeah.
This is... I'm glad... yeah. So, I do want to... we brought a clip, and I 2 years later, it seems like you still are processing that you met President Obama. Let's just show everyone how you reacted then.
It is now... my privilege I'm sorry, don't kick me out.
And Johanna cares about the example she sets as much as the exams that she scores. What you just need to settle down.
So you have to tell me. Yeah. Dude, when you left there, in 2016, did you already have in your head that you wanted to come back, that you wanted to run for office?
I had in my head, they're never letting me back in here.
Yeah. So what steps led to you deciding to make a run for this?
Well, 2016 was a really tricky year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot happened. And I'm a high school history teacher. I had really been teaching kids to get involved in their communities, to be a part of the solution. And it felt like that narrative was slipping away, that people weren't conducting themselves in a way that was solution driven. So
now you're in DC and it is freshman orientation. Yeah. And there are a lot of freshmen there this year, a lot of new congresspeople in DC. As a teacher, does it feel like actual orientation that you would have for students?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. First of all, children conduct themselves so much more responsibly than adults. Yeah. Yes. Young people are open to just hearing about ideas that are different from theirs, learning about other people. And, of course, you have an adult in the room who says, you know, these are parameters by which we behave. All bets are off in D.C.
Yeah.
It's a lot different. Orientation was a lot different.
I also, you know, anyone, when Republicans come in to serve, when Democrats come in to serve, when you are freshman congresspeople, a lot of people have run on the idea that Congress is dysfunctional. This is, I would say, the one thing that's nonpartisan is everybody says what's currently there is a mess. Have you found it dysfunctional already?
Well, I mean, I don't want to criticize anyone because, of course, they have a system by which they operate. But, I mean, you go in, everything is separated by Republican and Democrat. Even our first vote, literally, it took us about 2 hours to vote. You picked up a paper on one side of the room, you checked a box, you took it to the other side of the room, and I'm sitting there like, you know, there's an app for that. Like, we could have done this in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm just watching it because you hear it, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is it, does, I mean,
I'm
obviously
here.
We know
it's a good thing we're here.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like so, I mean, so there are just so many inefficiencies, right? Not even about politics,
right.
Just people doing things in a slow, stupid way.
What he said.
I said it. I said it.
Well, I think, and a lot of it is just, this is how we've always done it.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I'm thinking, but is it a rule? Can we change it?
Yeah.
Can we do it different?
I want to ask about, obviously, you're in a unique situation, and everybody brings their own expertise to the job, and your expertise is education. We currently have an education secretary, Betsy DeVos, who's doing a lot to unwind. I'm going to ask, don't make any facial expressions and let me guess how.
I can't make facial expressions.
Yeah. She's rolling back, obviously, a lot of things from the Obama era. Things both from sexual assault on campus to things like predatory lenders who take advantage of people who need college loans. Is that something that you are hopeful you will be able to address once things get started for you?
I'm going to die trying.
Yeah.
I'm going to die trying because the thing is, the thing is, even the way you phrased it, these are not Obama-era regulations. These are things that are put in place that improve outcomes for kids, that help guide. It's not like someone woke up one day and said, you know what? Let's decide to put some rules in place that make predatory lending illegal or protect people on college campuses. Those things were put in place because we needed them. Because things were out of control, because people were getting hurt, because the system was broken. So we worked, and every administration should be building upon what was done correctly, you know, the things that work. You don't tear everything down and start all over. And I know what that looks like for kids. I know how it disproportionately impacts children. And it's ridiculous that we're even having conversations that begin with not protecting children.
You,
it's not okay.
And I feel like...
It's not okay.
Absolutely.
Not okay.
One thing that seemed to have shifted from 2016 to 2018, and maybe it was one of the reasons the Democratic Party had more success, you were an example of this. You did not run against Donald Trump in your campaign. You ran on issues that affected the people in your district. Now that you are going to be in office, you know, there's a lot of questions about the oversight Congress has over the executive branch. Is this something that now that you're there, you are thinking about differently as far as your role in how it relates to the president?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm a history teacher. I am acquainted with the Constitution. I know what it says. I know what it's supposed to mean. I ran a campaign about issues, about what we need to do, how we need to work together. But I recognize that Congress has a responsibility for oversight. Doesn't matter who the president is. Nobody's above the law. This is so much bigger than any one person. And shame on any elected official who does not, you know, act upon that responsibility. If, you know, I ran, we want to get to governing. We want to work hard to improve lives for people. But if something comes out of this investigation that says there was collusion, just kidding. But whatever, I mean, we have a responsibility to act upon that. And that's Republicans and Democrats alike. If it were a different president and the same thing happened, Congress has oversight responsibilities, period.
Well, I wish you the best of luck in January, and it's very exciting to have you here. Thank you so much.
Excited to be here. Thank you.
Representative-elect Johanna Haines, everybody.
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Representative-elect Johanna Haines.
Hey, Henry.
Are you still getting used to Representative-elect?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I hear people say it to me, and I'm looking around like, oh, wait, you're talking to me.
That's me. Yeah.
Yes.
So we are recording this on December 10th. You start in Congress on January 3rd. What needs to happen in terms of staffing, organization between now and January 3rd? It's not that far away.
It's not. I am trying to staff up, interviewing people. Mm-hmm. I have a unique set of challenges in that most of the people on my campaign were children and young people, not old enough to vote or
just
come work with me.
That
just
would
volunteers.
Come
my students, former students. So many people brought over people from their campaign to the official side. Mm-hmm. I have to hire everyone.
Yeah. Do you enjoy that part? Are you looking forward to it?
You know what? I do enjoy it because I have really learned to find excellence in people. Mm-hmm. I'm not a person that checked all the boxes. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for people who other people don't think present as someone who would work in a congressional uh-huh. office.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, there's something about this person or I want to give them a shot.
Great. And
yeah.
The voters of Connecticut gave you a shot. You didn't have political experience going
yeah.
in. And what's so interesting watching from afar about the new Congress is the amount of people who do not have traditional backgrounds
yes.
in politics. These are many of the people in your incoming freshman class. Is that already kind of changing how you guys are approaching policy?
Absolutely. I mean, as the incoming freshman class was introducing themselves, you hear all of these people from all of these different backgrounds with diverse perspectives who view the world through many different lenses. But imagine a conversation about education with a teacher in the
yeah.
room, or about healthcare with a doctor and a nurse, you know, and a physician's assistant. All of these people who see the other side of policy, really being able to have a collective impact on the work that's mm-hmm. going to be done.
Yeah, it is so interesting to see the policy that's going to be shaped in the next few months. I'm so looking forward to seeing how it's going to change.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm excited because I think so many people, so many everyday people just like me, just like many of the other people who ran and won their races, feel like they've been left behind in these conversations. Mm-hmm. So it's refreshing and energizing because we're not so far removed from our communities.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't run because they feel like politics is done by people in D.C. They have wealthy, connected families. They start early. You did not do that. That's not your story. That's not the story of many people getting into Congress. What do you tell people as someone who's in it, who got elected about getting involved in politics?
Just do it. Figure out what your gift is and make it work. I mean, I didn't mm-hmm. have money. I didn't have a network. I thought it wasn't the right time. I haven't done enough. But I just knew I had to do something. Mm-hmm. So I just got in, and there were many times where I didn't know what to do. And I says, well, as a voter, what was it that bothered me most? As a constituent, what was it that I didn't like? I'll speak to that. And that's mm-hmm. what I did.
I think there's also probably a fear that I can't run for Congress. I don't know everything about every single issue. Of course, nobody knows everything about every single issue. But how do you kind of think about that, about building up expertise, hiring people, and also just running on what you know and running because you believe in a set of core principles?
But I think the idea of Congress is not that any one person knows everything. Uh-huh. This is that's why there's 435 members. Mm-hmm. So we all come together, and someone may be a content area specialist in one area, but I can say, well, this is what I hear when you say that. And then when we flip to another conversation that I might have more depth about, but it's this idea that we represent all of the people. And no one in our communities knows everything. So if we are a true representation of our communities, then we should have a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And having real conversations.
It's so nice to hear. It's such a refreshing thing to hear from someone going to Congress. I'm curious to ask you, we were just talking backstage before the show. I thought your race was called earlier. You kind of declared victory early on the election night. It was not officially called, I guess, until later. When you win, what happens? Who calls you? Like, what happens between winning on election night and then your first trip to D.C.?
Well, I really thought that I had a couple months until January 3rd to mm-hmm. kind of take a break and no. staff up and no. do all the work that needed to be done. Literally, it starts right on the ground. I mean, we were looking at the numbers coming in, so we knew long before it was called, our path to victory had been cleared. But literally, a few days later, we were in D.C. for orientation. There's press, there's decisions that have to be made. You know, you have to get credentials. All of these things have to happen literally within 72 hours.
That is amazing. Yeah. And I'm sure it's been just a sprint until right up to now, and will continue
sprint.
To be.
A sprint. We were just at Harvard last week for mm-hmm. New member orientation. We were in D.C. the week before for some congressional orientations, office lottery, all of those things.
But how did you do in the office lottery?
I did very well.
You did? Good.
I did very well.
Are you happy with your office?
I am. I got my first choice. I selected right. number 12. I thought it's a good number, you know.
Yeah, it's a great number.
Go by three, we can can't go wrong.
Yeah.
But I made I hadn't really been thinking about it because I thought I have no control over this. There were people who had lucky rocks and doing push-ups and flips and rosaries, and they yeah. had strategies. I'm like, what's a strategy for picking out of a lottery? So I just put my hand in and pulled it out, and some of the other members had scouted out offices and really had a list. I hadn't really thought about it because I figured, I'm in Congress. They have to give me a desk and a chair.
It can't be that bad.
It can't be that bad. I mean, I was my first 3 years of teaching, I was on a cart, then I shared a classroom, and then so now as a teacher, listen, just give me a space.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have one now in Congress. Congratulations. It was such
you.
A pleasure having you here.
Thank
Please come back when we can remove the elect from your title. You'll just be Representative Hayes.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Awesome.
Thanks so much.
We'll see you then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
When you're committed to raising the standard, you're bound to ruffle some feathers. At Happy Egg, we like to say we farm differently. But in reality, we produce eggs the way people used to. By partnering with local small family farmers who raise our happy hens on 8 or more acres. Because in our opinion, farming shouldn't be complicated. It should be happy. Choose happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.